You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 27th of July, 2023, and yet again, I am Matthew Raphael Johnson doing this on my own. Looking forward to the day when I don't have when Sven is out and we can start doing this together again. Today's topic is a depressing one, depressing on many levels. A lot of the topics here, there's some glimmer of hope in them, or in the sense that you can understand something better. It's a positive thing. But this is negative. And it's the destruction of Ukrainian Orthodoxy. And I'm talking about two articles by Stefan Kraganovich over the last 6 months or so concerning the treatment of the Orthodox Church in the areas under the colonial administration's control. Unfortunately, that includes the Kiev Caves. Very few actual Russian or Ukrainian Orthodox people are in the present ruling cabinet. Zelensky has already stated there'll be no elections while the war is going on. And of course, there probably can't be even afterwards, since he's so extremely unpopular. You have a foreign and largely Israeli cabinet and ruling class that is shutting down churches all over the place. A long time ago, I did my take on the so-called, Unity Council, creating this new, extremely liberal Ukrainian Orthodox Church, which it isn't so much, recognition of something. It has nothing to do with whether it's canonical or not. Canonical, which is not a huge surprise, has to do with following the canons. Recognition is irrelevant. Truth is truth, whether you recognize it or not. But even in terms of world orthodoxy, this body, and believe it or not, Satan keeps his people alive. Filaret is still the honorary patriarch, which apparently is a new office they've created. They've created a lot of things. And his role has always been to destroy any institution that he's a part of. Wherever he's gone, and he's in his 90s now, he has brought destruction. He is a complete atheist. He's a complete non-believer. And it's not a church that he now runs. Of course, a huge portion of the churches in Ukraine want nothing to do with this Unity Ukrainian group. It is legitimately large. That's because it has official sanction. It has CIA sanction. But it is extremely liberal, and one of their best relations is with the unions. And of course, full intercommunion is the norm. But we're not talking about that chimera. Now, something disturbing that I have come across is you have those vaguely in the true Orthodox movement, the anti-modernist movement, who are neutral or even pro-Ukraine in this war for no other reason than this old nemesis of the Moscow Patriarchate is supporting the war effort from Russia's side. As if they're in any position to criticize the actions of anyone, given how their witness has been so badly damaged through amateurism and factionalization to the point of utter humiliation. That's completely irrelevant where you have a purely genocidal depopulation agenda and where you have a Jewish president, Jews on both sides of the Atlantic, seeking the utter destruction of by far the largest number of churches in the country or what they control of it. Now, I'm specifically referring to the imprisonment of Metropolitan Pavel, whose last name is Lebed. I don't know if there's any relation with the former general, but and apparently it is against the law in Ukraine to justify Russia's invasion, which shouldn't be a surprise to you. I've gone through the so-called Ukrainian constitution at great length, and it speaks substantially of, you know, the rights and freedoms to do this. But constitutions are pieces of paper, as are laws. Now, I haven't followed the career of Metropolitan Pavel, or Paul, very closely. The Moscow Patriarchate has many problems. But sending this guy in prison is creating a precedent. Remember, Ukraine is this thriving democracy, as Pelosi and many others have said, which means democracy, as I've been saying for God knows how long, is perfectly consistent with destroying the church, with militarizing, so long as it's against the right people, and dire poverty, banning political parties that are, inconvenient. All of that is liberal democracy. Some of you know, I'm finishing up a very long paper for my Patreon page summarizing my basic point of view on the war since February of last year. I'm going to be posting it pretty soon. And there's a section in there where he talks about that he is going to recreate Israel in Ukraine. He says that explicitly. In other words, it's going to be totalitarian, militarized, and based around protecting his people. And his people turn out to be, of course, not just Jews, but foreign capital that's going to buy up the country as soon as this war is over. And that assumes, of course, Kiev continues to exist. I was on a radio show talking about Khmelnytsky yesterday. I don't know if it's out yet or not. Peter Kionis is his name. And I also mentioned this very fact that the depopulation of Ukraine and the defeat of Russia both are in the interests of the Jewish elite. Because of people like Khmelnytsky, the Jews have loathed Ukraine. And for something similar, Moscow, the Third Rome, is loathed. I mean, Rome is the enemy of everything Jewish. That's right in the Talmud. So having them kill each other and using that as a reason to shut down the church yet again is not only consistent with liberalism, this variation of Zionism, but is justified, and not just banning of political parties and everything else, by the dozens and taking their money, throwing tens of thousands of people in prison for thought crimes. Again, that's perfectly consistent with Jewish interests, and it is, in fact, liberal democracy. So when someone complains, as Karganovich does, that the West is quote-unquote hypocritical, and, talking about freedom of religion on one side of their mouth and saying nothing, if not openly rationalizing the imprisonment of Metropolitan Paul, it misses the point. They're well aware that it's a double standard, but that just means they don't believe the standard in the first place. So, Pavel is a very distinguished figure because he has jurisdiction over the Kiev Caves. And because of Russia's illiberalism, it is the enemy of liberalism and liberal democracy. This is fully, there's been not a word spoken about it. I think Al Jazeera did an article on it not too long ago. So all their prattle about, you know, human rights, respect for dignity, well, that depends on the group of people we're talking about. As far as the regime is concerned, in liberal democracy, only the left and its various guises are citizens. Just like when Mao Zedong referred to the people, he was only referring to party members. Everyone else was dehumanized and could be removed. So it wasn't that long ago that the Metropolitan was ejected from the Kiev Caves. I have video of the attacks on the Kiev Caves by the regime in Kiev. Of course, he is the administrator of the caves. And this is after spending 2 months under house arrest somewhere else. And of course, they make him wear an ankle bracelet, whatever it takes. It's the exact same treatment of the church under Jewish rule anywhere. And he's treated as a common criminal. Now, just like there's really no constitution there, there are no laws there. So long as Kiev repays its debt in blood, which is what's happening now, because they have nothing else of value to give, they could do as they please, and it gets called liberal democracy. Well, if Israel is a democracy, then so is militarized totalitarian Kiev. And of course, one of the worst punishments here is getting drafted and sent to the front where you know he's going to be killed. So the charges against him aren't all that clear, as Kraganovich has mentioned. I've heard a few things, but apparently justifying Russia's invasion is a crime, as is sowing religious discord, which I'm not sure how that fits into this. But it doesn't matter. There certainly will be no condemnation from the West, and unfortunately from many Orthodox jurisdictions, have no difficulty with this. Now, he's a diabetic. If you remember a long time ago when I was talking about Milosevic in Yugoslavia, I found it symbolically significant that, of course, they killed him in prison. That's not what they said. They mixed up his medication for a severe heart problem with a drug used to cure leprosy. The fact that, I mean, how does that even exist? The leprosy drug was a symbol that he is a leper. He is now rogue outside of the regime, and therefore we're going to kill him with it. I have the feeling that the same thing may well happen here. His contact with the outside world is almost non-existent. And since there are, you know, there are no supplies, his diabetic condition is not going to be treated. I don't think they have the capacity, even if they wanted to. As of now, he is, you know, these charges are hanging over his head, and he has been brought to an actual prison. Now, to add insult to injury, his bail was set extremely high. Of course, none of these are by any means violent crimes. Remember, the regime puts people in prison. They don't go to prison. His bail was set at 33 million hryvnia, which sounds like a lot until you realize you're talking about the Ukrainian currency. It's about $850,000. Obviously, he does not have this. And I don't know how he's going to raise it. But this is perfectly normal in Ukraine. He's not the only one by a long shot, but he certainly is the highest ranking one. Of course, there's no presumption of innocence. This is a martial law situation. And because he doesn't have much contact with the outside world, he may have a diabetic heart attack. And I'm not sure if he's able to consult with a lawyer, or if he really, you know, he's been preaching against the regime for a long time. He was too inconvenient, and frankly, he was too popular. So they got rid of him and many like him. Because this is martial law, excessive bail, which at least in the U.S. is not supposed to. In fact, they're getting rid of cash bail in a few states. Here, though, it's perfectly acceptable. And there's something like the Eighth Amendment in the Ukrainian constitution. But just like Sven Longshanks was sent to prison with some medical conditions, under normal circumstances, they were releasing people for COVID for a long time. That's not going to happen here. Because we all know the regime takes these kind of so-called crimes far more seriously than violence, which is very useful for them, especially when it's non-white. So this is, you know, on numerous levels, this is absurd. And the Russians have already demanded his release. But it's sort of like the German camps in early 45. No supplies were getting there. If no supplies were getting to the army, then how many supplies do you expect to go to a prison packed with political criminals? Ukraine is run by a criminal oligarchy. That's how they got the power that they have. It is your classic example of a conspiracy. That's part of what an oligarchy is. And of course, the last thing they ever want to deal with is obviously Russia, nationalism, and this Orthodox royalism, all of which were supported by this metropolitan. And I hate to say it, but I want to be wrong, and maybe I am, but he may not make it out of there. So, and then, you know, the handful of Russian POWs that they've taken are treated very poorly too, both by design and really by desperation. So he can't post bail as far as I know. He was dragged out of the Kiev Caves monastery. And of course he is seen as a flight risk. So you have, as of now, and I don't know how far along this is, but the Moscow branch of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church has started a collection to raise his bail. And of course, that's perfectly, you know, he mentions the collection of the saints in Romans 15. You know, this is part of our mission here. Now, he does, the author here, Karaganovich, let me read here. In an epic less poison than our own, Metropolitan Pavel's circumstances would be a human interest story of the first order. A genuinely free mass communication media, which in the West does not exist, would run with the story and make sure that everyone on the planet was made aware of the unjustly persecuted Metropolitan and his deplorable predicament. But a thorough internet search fails to disclose any mention of it in that part of the world where human rights and freedom of conscience are so venerated. Now, you know how naive I think so many conservatives are. I don't know what his political persuasion is. A lot of his writing is sarcastic, and for a very good reason. But I think he's serious here. Never have the Western media given a damn about Russian Orthodox persecution. This would not be a human interest story. The media were actively covering up the liquidation of the church under Stalin and beyond it. This is something, not just a human interest story under no circumstances, but they're welcoming it now. But there's nothing new about that today. A lot of the anti-Soviet stuff was anti-Russian. The Soviets were not a problem, but only when they acted like a czar, in Woodrow Wilson's phrase, were they attacked. You probably have been able to figure out, if you're not following this, that the valuables, just like under the Bolsheviks, have been looted from the monastery, and they're showing up in, you know, Western museums, and even a Vatican in a few cases. Some of them are being sold abroad because, you know, they're gold and whatever. But the official explanation is that, you know, the church needs to be state controlled. And not in the older sense of the term, I mean the modern totalitarian sense of the term, but somehow this is the good of the church. The regime says we're removing these objects so they don't get harmed during the war. Well, there was no chance of that anyway, despite being far outside of the war zone. The only way that a monastery would be harmed is if Ukrainian soldiers fortified it, which they very, very well will do, just like they're going into the cities and doing the same. The chances are it wouldn't be attacked anyway. The Soviets said that we're, you know, taking church valuables to relieve the famine that they, of course, themselves cause. And so it's the Jewish mindset wherever you go. It's the exact same thing. You know, the Greek artifacts from the Acropolis and in Egypt even ended up being at the British Museum. Now, he also says, the author here, just as naively, that if it had been someone like Cardinal Magenti or even Joseph Slippy, who was a Greek Catholic under during the Cold War, this would be different. It would be on front page news. Well, obviously that it wouldn't be different. Cardinal Magenti, even in the 50s, was a fairly marginal figure. I think he was on the cover of a news magazine. But the U.S. did not support the 56 revolution in Hungary. Today, of course, these guys are extremely obscure. Slippy was never a household name. I think Magenti had his 15 minutes. But yeah, I guess what he's saying is the Vatican could act as a, especially back then, as a megaphone. Of course, the West did nothing to assist them under any circumstances. Now, CIA agents like this Turkish, I can't remember his name now, this Turkish minister, and the Protestant fundamentalists often double as CIA assets in Turkey, and they've gone crazy. You know, neocon, you know, the idiots like Lindsey Graham and Pence and these hacks have spoken of, you know, these missionaries there. They will say nothing about the Christians being attacked in Israel right now. And because, you know, the Protestants are a useful group of people in pushing Zionist and liberal interests, and they're so naive, and a lot of them are ex-military and all this. But at no time, with the exception of the handful of Protestants who are actual assets, I mean, this has always been the problem in North Korea and China, is they're not sure who's real and who isn't. Russians are in no danger in China. Americans, it's a different story. And it's the American military's fault. But none of this would be a human interest story in the West at any time. If anybody, Cardinal Magenti, but it's not like you had a huge Hungarian lobby that wanted to sing his praises. The head of this unified Ukrainian church, the Epiphanius, the unification institution, of course, rationalizes this whole thing. And he benefits because the state will turn over the Kiev Caves Monastery to him and his make-believe group. But anyone who is silent here is complicit. Orthodox people, I don't care what disagreements, you know, increasingly obscure that you have with some of these groups, this has to at least be spoken of. Oh, we've had the situation in Israel as well with absolutely no interest from anybody. You know, the Greeks are, you know, Greeks have largely been driven out of the old city anyway. And of course, just like the New York Times in the 1930s, Mike Pence goes on Tucker Carlson and says that he's visited Ukraine recently. He was there, and there was a priest there that assured him that there was no such thing as religious persecution. So, now, I want to make this point yet again, and I have to keep making it. The regime is aware that it uses claims of rights and responsibilities and civic duty very selectively. They're aware of that. Liberalism and the freedom of corporate capital, that's the only reason why the regime exists. Legalization of usury, that kind of thing. And whatever language will assure its existence is what they're going to use. And this author talks about situation ethics, which is largely overrated as a diagnosis. Situations contain their own principle. Well, do these principles have anything in common? There still has to be a foundation. And the foundation is not necessarily philosophical, but it's strictly ideological and economic. situation, ethics isn't really talked about much anymore. And really, it's not an impressive theoretical edifice. It simply means whatever supports the left, American expansionism, imperialism, usury, all essentially one and the same thing, is good, and anything else, is bad. Remember back in the 80s, they used to talk about relativism all the time. This is how the regime, even before then, late 60s, this is how they're going to destroy, and full freedom and all this kind of thing. And the minute they took any kind of power, they destroyed their opposition. Well, they didn't mean it. Free speech or filthy speech movement on campuses, way back when, during the Vietnam War, they made these universal arguments, but of course they weren't meant to be universal. The left does this all the time. They promise the world to people the minute they take over. And there was a substantial revolution in the summer of 2020, and a very violent one, which brought the, and remember, these people, the woke word, stop using it, please. They're leftists. Nothing has changed in terms of their agenda. The only thing that's changed is what happened in 2020, and now it's perfectly acceptable to destroy white people, to drive them out of their areas. South Africa still is being depopulated of whites. And, of course, Ukraine is being depopulated. So that's not an issue. The refugee situation, which they invented about from North Africa and the Middle East, has no bearing on the Ukrainian refugees because they're a different color. And therefore, they're not as politically useful. None of this is new to the people controlling the media and to the regime itself. So situation ethics, it's a way to dismiss these issues. They have absolutes, but it's in the ideological foundation of the left in general and its various factions. You notice how the regime speaks of the rules-based order. You notice they say rules and not laws. Rules can be jettisoned. Words are always being reinterpreted. We've spoken about how definitions are changing all over the place. And so you could actively depopulate a country, but condemn the Serbs for allegedly ethnic cleansing their sworn enemies. Of course, that wasn't true, but it didn't matter. This is a post-truth society. Their ultimate goal, I mean, this is like World War I, Britain was able to get its two big rivals to fight each other. It was diabolically brilliant. That's what World War I was. It's very similar here as far as New Khazaria, which is not a shock. It's supposed to be in southern Ukraine, and even parts of eastern Ukraine. And despite the Hasidics despising Ukrainians due to Khmelnytsky and the Cossacks that came after him, suddenly they're engaging in rallies to support the Ukrainian cause. That explains the fanaticism of the regime to the point where they're running out of ammunition themselves. And don't forget, the New York Times refers to this as a vibrant democracy, which is why I keep using the term. They love the word vibrant. And then he does mention that in the uppermost ranks of Ukrainian society, there are very few Orthodox people. And the Ukrainian movement, I've supported, people like Vladimir from, the early 90s. But that generation is long gone. The only thing that's left is Filaret and, his students. Many of the UAOC consecrated bishops for the Russian True Orthodox and Underground Church. Mefodiy was I wrote about him substantially. But that's history. That's long gone. This is an anti-Orthodox regime. And part of the reason that this unification institution is supported officially, not just by Kiev, but by Washington, is that it is extremely liberal in its political orientation. So back, it was last November, there were a series of raids to harass the community there, and any kind of resistance was taken as grounds. And I've seen the videos of this taken by people there, not official video. And the humiliating mistreatment kind of reminds me of the house arrest that Tsar Nicholas and his family were placed under. It's designed to be humiliating. And many of the monks were arrested. And the ultimate objective, of course, of the colonial administration is to oust Russians and then essentially melt down the monastery for its for money. Keep in mind that, you know, the Ukrainian so-called autocephalists, at least today, have no interest in monasticism. They don't have very many monasteries. It's simply too liberal for that kind of thing. They're going to, you know, ordain women and all this other things that they're talking about. So it isn't situational ethics. It is consistent. They just don't tell you what the foundation is. The foundation is everything that goes along with usury and free trade and liberalism, of course, is really another word for that. You know, the State Department has this stupid Office of International Religious Freedom. Half the things on there are invented, usually have to do with its opponents. But, of course, this isn't going to be mentioned there, despite the total deorthodoxation of the country. Same thing in Britain. They have their own variation of that. They say that we monitor religiously motivated abuses, harassment, and discrimination. But it doesn't count in their case because liberalism is the only watchword. It's also in the Jewish interest. As I've said before, 80% of the Jewish population lived within the Polish Empire, which included much of Ukraine. There is a long history of hatred between Jews and both Ukrainians and Russians. Getting them to kill each other and using that as a cover to destroy the church is right up their alley. Ukrainska Pravda, which is the official, one of the official newspapers allowed to function, says, it justifies all this and says that the Russian church or even the Ukrainian church, indirectly ruled by Moscow, is dangerous for our health and our life. This is a direct quote from them. I'm quoting from them here concerning the caves. It says, they say in this newspaper, on 1 December 2022, the president of Ukraine reported that the National Security Council has urged the cabinet of ministers of Ukraine to prepare a legislation to ban the activity of the UOCMP in Ukraine and started reviewing the legitimacy of the MP's residence in the Kiev caves. And that's a quote directly from the newspaper, which just reprints official proclamations as if it's news. Since Jews dominate this whole process, they don't really give a damn. And I didn't think that the cabinet of ministers can prepare legislation. This is just an executive order, which is how Western governments after 2020 have been ruled anyway. So this isn't inconsistent. Anybody that opposes them will be destroyed. They justify certain policies talking about human rights, but they don't believe it. Human rights, just like in the Soviet version, the Chinese version in the 50s, it only applies to supporters of the regime and specifically the Jewish elite. So that's my show for today. This is extremely depressing. It's hard to do. There's very little we can do here. But this is an anti-Christ government, no different than in the Soviet Union in Ukraine right now. And it is a totalitarian state, and they're preaching it from the housetops, and apparently that is perfectly consistent with the regime's liberal democratic foundation. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Talk to you next week.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.